Good morning, everyone. Good to see you. So, I don't know, we got about 6 days in now, seven. Who's counting? Anyway, we're beginning to enter the home stretch of our session. And now this is the time when I, as the Dharma talker, is supposed to say, you know, say, don't slack off, pour it on. But actually, I think what I really want to say is, relax. It's easy to tell the people who are late for work practice because we're the ones who are standing high up on the stairs. So I had a great vantage to look down from. And, you know, I looked at the line and I didn't see anyone slacking off or holding back or, you know. What I felt was great energy. But what I saw a lot of was like anxiety, like bug eyes, like and so, man, we just got a couple days left. It's a done deal, you know. You can do this more or less skillfully, but ultimately and fundamentally, it's not possible to deviate from the Buddha way. If you're fucking up, then it's complete manifestation, fucking up. So, really take time to appreciate yourselves, your effort, the effort of others. This session is going to keep unfolding. We don't need to push and shove at it. We can allow it to grow more like a plant rather than like a car we're trying to push uphill. Hong Ji said, the subtlety of seeing and hearing transcends mere colors and sounds. And then he says, the whole affair functions without leaving traces and mirrors without obscurations. It functions without leaving traces. We don't need to exactly see what's going on for us to know it's going on. It functions without leaving traces. And then he says, very naturally, mind and dharmas emerge and harmonize. And perhaps, I hope all of us are having a chance to experience that in our zazen. You know, we sit there, we just sit. We put our sincerity into the posture, into the breath. And very naturally, mind and dharmas emerge and harmonize. We don't have to do anything to make this happen. It just happens very naturally. We hear the cicadas. A thought comes up. We let it go. Sweat runs down our back. We think about what we're going to do when we leave session. Nen after nen after nen, moment after moment after moment, very naturally, thoughts come up, mind and dharmas harmonize. And our commitment is simply to allow this process and to practice skillfully with it, which in the context of zazen is simply to notice those, that mind, those dharmas coming up. Just notice them and then return to the posture, return to the breath. And now it's a whole new nin. a whole new world, a whole new life. I think this is part of what Dogen is getting at in that sort of mysterious line in the Fukan Zazenji, where he says, think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking beyond thinking or non-thinking? That's a quotation from Yakusan Igen, the Dharma grandfather of our founder, our Chinese founder. It's quite a simple little mondo where Yakusan, maybe he was doing zazen, but a monk just came right up and asked him, what do you think about when you're doing zazen? And he says, I think about not thinking. The monk goes, how do you think about not thinking? And Yakusan says, non-thinking, beyond thinking. And to me, what this gets at is just how naturally our minds and bodies function. As Miyoko Sensei pointed out, this non-thinking is not very mysterious. He tells you how to do it right there. Put one leg on top of the other. Put your hands in the mudra. Put your tongue on the roof of your mouth. And all that sounds very straightforward, but the trouble arises, we think we know what that is. We think we know what it is to put the tongue on the roof of your mouth, to cross one leg over the other. We think we know what thinking is. We think we know what it is not to think. And what we're told over and over and over again is the Dharma is ungraspable. You can explain what a cicada is. You can dissect it. You can read about it in a science book. But can you know what it is? It just happens quite naturally, this non-thinking. It's self-explanatory. Therefore, the way of zazen does not lie in having thoughts, and it does not lie in having no thought, but as Hongzhi says, it's allowing mind and dharmas to emerge very naturally. Relax, it's going to happen. It is happening. And all we need to do is to practice in that moment, with that moment, with that nen. Come back to the breath, come back to the posture. We don't have to think, is my back straight? Is this? It's just, you know, it's like the cicada. You just sit. Shikantaza, just the breath. Of course, we're not so crazy about the fact that this very natural process is completely beyond our grasp. Wouldn't it be lovely to take some kind of great teaching home from this session, you know, something you could make a little poster out of and put on, you know, put on your door and look at and go, yeah, you know. That's really it. And so far, none of our Dharma talkers, including me, seems to have delivered on that. You know, we really want to know, are we doing this right? I mean, my zazen must suck. My mind is like all over the place. My body, my legs are killing me. Well, you know, it's not brain surgery. yesterday afternoon, my mind was mush. I mean, it was awful because, you know, the heat was really getting to me. Was my Zazen bad? This morning it was kind of nice and cool, and my Zazen was pleasant and relaxed. Was my Zazen good? No, it's just mind and dharmas were emerging very naturally according to causes and conditions. And when causes and conditions change, our experience changes because our experience is empty. No. There really isn't any way you can do bad Zazen except by, you know, refusing to do the practice when you become aware that you've gone off the practice. You know, if you're staying with it, if you're allowing mind and dharmas to emerge naturally, really that's the whole ball of wax. Don't look beyond it. And when we do this, when we allow mind and dharmas to emerge naturally, this is what I think Dogen is getting at when he talks about the koan, capital K, the koan that emerges and cannot be snared. This is not, you know, we talk about the koans in Zen literature. That's not the koan that he's referring to here. What he's referring to is what he calls Genjo koan, the koan, the big koan of this moment, the big koan as the mind and dharmas emerge naturally in this moment. And this koan, this Genjo koan, even though it's right here, right now, right in front of our noses, is our noses, it cannot be grasped. Completely unattainable. And yet, how completely ordinary. When it's hot, we sweat. I think about that bead of sweat that Chodo talked about. It's perfectly possible to be awakened by a bead of sweat, by a headache or a backache, by a thought, if we realize that the thought is a thought, just another dharma arising in this moment as a result of causes and conditions. So this Genjo koan, even though it's as big as the whole universe, completely unattainable and unknowable, on the other hand, it's not such a big deal. It's ordinary. Uchiyama Roshi says, he defines this Genjo koan as the ordinary profundity of the present moment becoming the present moment. The ordinary profundity. And then he goes on to say, even though I say profundity, it is not something mysterious that is enveloped in dense mist and cannot be seen. It's not mysterious. It's just mind and dharma emerging naturally and harmonizing in this moment. It's right there, always right there. We don't have to go looking. So, being human, we very naturally don't want to take yes for an answer. We want to know, well, what is it? We want to trap the koan. We want to ensnare it. We want to understand it, we want to get it, even though we're getting it on a far deeper level than any explanation could possibly give to us. We want to see it. We want to see it for ourselves. And somehow we think we're not really seeing it, because if I could really see it, I'd feel much better than I'm feeling right now, and I feel like shit. So, you know, as Koshin mentioned the blind, you know, the blind men and the elephant, and Dogen also mentions it in Fukan Zazenji, where, you know, each of the blind men is trying to see the elephant, and one of them has the tail and says, well, the elephant's like a rope, and one has the leg, he says the elephant's like a stump. And, you know, it's easy to laugh at those blind men, you know, but we, that's what we do, you know. But their trouble is not their understanding. Their trouble is they're trying to nail it. They're trying to say the elephant is this, the elephant is that. The guy who has the elephant's tail, he doesn't have part of the elephant. That's just an idea in our heads, parts and whole and so on. He's got the elephant. If you don't think you've got the elephant when you've got the elephant's tail, try jerking on it. The elephant is right there. Same goes with the legs and the trunk. What we really long to do is find a stable place to stand outside that old elephant and look on it and see the elephant and go, ooh, there it is. But we can't do that, because as soon as we step back, the elephant comes with us. As soon as we say, ah, there's the elephant, it's the elephant saying, ah, there's the elephant. So where's the elephant now? The elephant completely vanishes, like that ox and the ox herding pictures. You know how, if you've seen those pictures, in the later stages, there's no ox anymore. The ox is gone. So that's another stage of practice, where it's all the elephant. I'm the elephant, and it's all the elephant. There's no, not even, you can't say anything about it. You can't say I, you can't say elephant. You can't say nothing. It's all just, is what it is, man. But fortunately, we don't stay in that dead space very long, because, as in Zen language, there's a place to turn around. And the discriminating mind is also the elephant. The world of yes and no, you and me, that is not excluded from the elephant. So right there, when we die and just become one with the whole elephant, blind, deaf, dumb, nothing, boom, it happens automatically. We come back to life, and there's all the stuff again. Dharmas and mind harmonizing. And there's delusion and enlightenment, you and me, and all of that. And, you know, you can say that these are various stages of spiritual development, but actually all of them are Genjo Koan. The whole, you know, each stage we're in is the complete manifestation of the truth. So, is there development? Well, you know, some of us are old and have been practicing a while, and some of us are younger and haven't been practicing as long. So when we come back to life, things get really, really interesting, because then what happens is we have an opportunity to manifest that fantastic natural energy of mind and dharmas emerging. And great thing about it is it's not a matter of like ginning ourselves up to, you know, some kind of superhuman effort. Yeah, yeah, rah, rah, go, go. Not at all. It might involve that if the moment requires that. Sometimes it does. But sometimes it involves just being there and just being skillful. Sometimes the skillful thing is to go to bed when you're tired or take care of yourself when you're sick. Sometimes the skillful thing is to go down to the bottom of the ocean to bring up a pearl for other people to look at and enjoy. It all depends, doesn't it? Dogen was very, as we know, very focused on this issue of practice, enlightenment, emerging with mind and dharmas in this moment effectively. And one place he really found an excellent example of what he meant by practice is in the work of the cook, the monastery cook, the Tenzo. And of course, we don't have to go back as far as Dogen to appreciate that practice. We've been seeing it right here under our noses, meal after meal, just wonderful food served with love. And although I know an immense amount of effort went into those simple, delicious meals, I you know, this is probably the first session where I maybe I was just not around at the time, but I haven't gotten any of these panic hysterical vibes from the kitchen. It just seems to mind and dharma emerge seamlessly, quietly. You know, our Tenzo doesn't have to call a lot of attention to himself. His food pervades our entire practice. Nothing happens without that food. And of course, he gets something out of it too, because the food comes back to him in the form of people who can stand up and work in the kitchen. So, where does his effort leave off and ours begin? And sometimes things don't go smoothly in the Dharma world, as we know. Sometimes, you know, the assistant Tenzo had to take a break for a day or two to take care of, you know, some medical stuff for himself. And so our Ino stepped in. And all of this had, you know, happened very naturally to me. You know, maybe there was horror going on besides behind the scenes, but I didn't feel it. And the food, the Dharma food kept coming. The practice kept being exemplified in a very quiet, unobtrusive, ordinary, and totally profound way. And I'm deeply grateful to you, Tenzo, and to everyone who was responsible for that, as well as the servers. Absolutely the best service I've seen at one of these, hands down. So, as for what Dogen had to say about the Tenzo, he has a story that he tells, and I think it's kind of touching. You know, he arrived in the harbor at China in 1223 when he was still a young whippersnapper monk, about 23 years old. And they were quarantined for 30 days. You had to wait 30 days before you could go ashore. So he was, you know, hanging out with the captain. And one day, this old monk comes on board to buy mushrooms. And let's face it, Dogen, you know, even though it was a profoundly risky thing to do, he was kind of a spiritual tourist, right? You know, he coming to China to see the real Zen. It goes much deeper than that, of course, but you can look at it in terms of our ordinary experience. And of course, when he sees this monk come on board, he lights up. This might be the first encounter he's had with the practice in China. And this old guy, and when I say old, he's about a year older than I am. So this old guy comes on board, and it turns out he's the Tenzo from the monastery in Mount Aiwang. And he's come on board to buy mushrooms. He's traveled by foot 14 miles to get mushrooms because tomorrow's the Buddha's birthday, and he wants there to be mushrooms in the noodle soup on Buddha's birthday. This was really an important part of his heart, his service, and he expressed it by walking 14 miles. And this kind of, you know, we think of Dogen being so severe, but this kind of blew Dogen's mind. And he asked, and I think this quote really shows you where the young Dogen was at. It tells us that there is hope for us all. He asked the old man, "But why, when you are so old, do you do the hard work of a Tenzo? Why do you not spend your time practicing Zazen or working on the koans of the ancient teachers?" And he says, "Is there something special to be gained from working as a Tenzo? In other words, is there some enlightenment goody to be gotten here that I'm not seeing?" So even though Dogen had been practicing for many years in Japan, we can recognize the mind he brought to China. Where is it? I want it. Where is it? I want it. So he asked the old man, "Is there something special to be gained from working as a Tenzo?" And the old man burst out laughing and remarked, "My good friend from abroad, you do not understand what practice is all about, nor do you know the meaning of characters." And characters in this context, it's a calligraphy metaphor. You know, there's all sorts of zillions of different characters in Chinese, all very complex and, you know, takes many, many years to master calligraphy. So this is a metaphor for the multiplicity of dharmas, equally complex, equally hard to get your arms around, equally hard to master. So this made Dogen feel ashamed, and the old monk took pity on him and said, "Look, if you have this question about how, what practice is, what mastering the multiplicity of things is, what it's about, you're going to find your way, kid. It's going to happen for you if you keep that question." And there must have been something about Dogen that impressed this monk, because several months later, the old monk retired. On his way back home, he stopped off to see Dogen, who was now practicing with Ju Qing. And they talked about this and that, but Dogen wanted to hear more about characters. So he asked the old monk, And the monk said, "A person who studies characters must know just what characters are. And those intending to practice the way must understand what practice is." I asked him, "What are characters?" He said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. "What is practice?" And the monk said, "There is nothing in the world that is hidden." It's not really difficult, abstruse or abstract. It's not hidden. Mind and dharmas emerge naturally, nen after nen. You know, it's sort of like baseballs coming in our head. And we can be there and hit skillfully, or we can go. Either way, it's a manifestation of Genjo Koan. But that doesn't get food in those bowls. Nor does, "Hey, I'm a cook, I walked 14 miles, I'm practicing the way." That doesn't do it either. Mind and dharmas harmonize seamlessly. And when it's time to do oryoki, the servers come in and food is put in our bowls. First in the Buddha bowl, and then in the other two. No biggie. Dogen quotes a poem from Sui To, who was one of the authors of the Blue Cliff Record, to which he says really encapsulates what he learned about characters from the old monk. And the poem is this: 1, 7, 3, 5. The truth you search for cannot be grasped. As night advances, a bright moon illuminates the whole ocean. The dragon's jewels are found in every wave. Looking for the moon, it is here, in this wave, in the next.